but we're going to deal during this last 20-minute segment just for a short time with some of the things said, because most of the arguments are just a repeat of what we've heard before. What we've been listening for, have heard, and that is the support for the first day, being the day we're now supposed to worship on, comes from Acts, the 20th chapter, and the 7th verse. This point is that the commandment is to follow the example of Paul. He takes the 20th chapter of Acts and the 7th verse as an example to follow, because Paul's example of keeping the Sabbath can't be followed. He was keeping the Sabbath to teach people not to keep the Sabbath. Here's your argument. That doesn't make sense to me. Acts the 20th chapter, if in fact you want to follow this example, make this clear. Acts 20 verse 7. You all know this, that Paul is speaking, says on the first day of the week when the disciples came together to break bread. Go to Acts 2. We can't ignore it. Acts 2. Acts 2 and verse 46. This breaking of bread, even if it was a communion, was not unique for this particular day. It says that they continued daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house. It was a daily event. This was not unique. On the first day of the week, again, verse 7 of chapter 20, they came together to break bread. Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow, and continued to speak until midnight. We would agree that this is a night meeting. If we follow biblical reckoning, this was Saturday night. He probably spent the Sabbath, as his custom was, with them. And because he was leaving, went into the night. But if you choose to say this was Sunday night, then it would make a challenge for you in that biblical reckoning would make it Monday. So either was there Saturday night or Sunday night. Either way, this cannot be normative, because you don't worship on Sunday night or Saturday night. This is an isolated incident, but if you follow Jesus' footsteps, he was known to preach on a daily basis whenever he got a chance. This is a very flimsy text at best to say that this is a command to now keep Sunday. We've already been through all of the Sunday texts. You haven't, but I did. Those resurrection passages, 8 of them in the New Testament, please check them carefully and scour them for anything that resembles a command to keep these days holy. Matthew 28, verse 1. Mark 16, verses 2 and 9. Luke 24, 1. John 21. All of these are texts about Jesus resting in the tomb and his disciples keeping the Sabbath holy so that they don't come to anoint him until the first day of the week, because that was a work day for them. Then you have John 20 and verse 19. You kind of ran past this one, and I understand why. John 20 and verse 19. We might as well look at it, since you claim the New Testament says keep the first day. John 20 and verse 19. Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut, this is not a worship service, where the disciples were assembled. Why? For fear of the Jews. These guys are hiding. This is no worship service. Then you have Acts 20 and verse 7. We already dealt with that. And 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. The actions in your argument is support for Jesus or God giving us a command to keep Sunday holy. It doesn't exist. And if he's going to give us a counter command, it's got to be somewhere. I'm still looking. 1 Corinthians 16, verses 1 and 2. Now concerning the collection for the saints. And you can't out-shout me on this one. You must deal with the words. Now concerning the collection for the saints. Talking about an offer. He's trying to collect some money to help some saints. As I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store. This is not bring to church. This is not have a meeting and collect it. He says, get your offering ready so that when I come through, I can pick it up. Lay by him in store. Translate that. As God hath prospered them, that there be no gatherings when I come. This is no instance of Paul having any worship service with the saints. In fact, there are some people, and I respect you for not at least asserting it, who are honest enough to admit we keep the first day of the week, not because there was a command in the Bible, because one does not exist, but in fact we do it in honor of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. While that might be noble in matters of worship, we must get our direction from the object of worship, who is God. He tells us clearly in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 26. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 26, how this death is to be remembered. For as often as ye eat this bread and drink this cup, ye do show the Lord's death till he come. He says, remember my death by taking the emblems of my broken body and spilt blood. Then in Romans the sixth chapter, and the fourth verse. Therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that life as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. We celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus through communion and through baptism as instructed by the Lord. There is no divine command. The question then remains, why then Sunday? There is a reason for it. Turn to Daniel 7:25. Daniel 7:25 does not leave us in the dark regarding this. You literally have spent most of your time attempting to tear down the law and then build back nine of them. The sum total of the argument is that Jesus dying on the cross means that the Ten Commandments are now nailed, but the other nine are still brought back to life. Just the fourth one is not to be kept. You go through all of that to steal that commandment. Why? The seventh chapter and the 25th verse of Daniel have already given us a warning that the time would come when a power would rise up that would speak great words against the Most High, shall wear out the strength of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. Let me say an interesting thing about this times and laws. There are two words, two Aramaic words that are translated times in Daniel 7. In this particular passage, the word zimin is used. Adon is used earlier. Adon, when translated time earlier, means a span of time. This particular usage of the word that's translated time actually is the plural form of a specific set time, which means there would be an attempt to change a law that relates to time that is specifically set and recurs over and over. There is but one law that points to. It's the Sabbath law. Revelation, the 14th chapter, gives us a further warning and suggests to those who are serious at the end of time that they be careful to render worship in accordance with the will of God. What is that worship? That is, in the 14th chapter and 7th verse, saying with a loud voice, fear God, give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of water. This is a direct connection to the fourth commandment. I conclude my session with Genesis 2. I cannot let you get by with suggesting that the Ten Commandments and the Sabbath specifically was made for the Jews. As you know, Jews, literal blood Jews, are the descendants of Abraham. Genesis, the second chapter and the second verse. And I challenge you to disconnect this from the creation narrative that gives us what took place the first seven literal days. On the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made. He rested on the seventh day from all his work which he made. He blessed the seventh day, sanctified it, because in it he had rested from all his work. The Sabbath was instituted before a Jew was ever born. Go back to Eden, and I would question this. I'd ask you this. If in fact the Sabbath, it doesn't matter that the Sabbath was instituted in the Garden of Eden, if the Sabbath is done away with somehow because there's a new dispensation, I would question, how does that make sense? The original intent of God can clearly be seen in the Garden of Eden before sin enters the picture. Before sin entered, God created male and female. There's been no deviation from that in God's plan. There was husband and wife. Marriage is part of his idea. And there was the Sabbath. This was not a post-sin phenomenon, but it was the original intent of God. That's why at the crucifixion, there's no reason for that law to be nailed to the cross.
Thank you, Dr. Carter. Even as we continue, we understand that we see in the back over here that Scripture prophesied that some would attempt to change the law. But even before I talk about how that change took place, I have to affirm, Brother Donahue, that even though you may have some aversion towards secular history is history all the more. The truth is, as we look at the arguments that have been used, we find that they indeed have been influenced by secular history. There's the secular theologians throughout history who have made claims similar to the claims that you've made today, because as we've seen time and time again, we still have yet to see a text, a single text, that says explicitly what you claim it says. You keep saying that the Sabbath has been done away with, and the text that you point to, we see such words as covenant and law and other things, but we've yet to see Sabbath. In fact, you would go so far that even when you did your further studies on the Hebrews 4 passage, you went as far as to say that the word sabbatisma is the same as the word sabbata. Now, I really don't know how advanced in Greek you are, but that is a completely different word. Also, you have to understand, you use the word katapausis and sabbatismos interchangeably. We already established last night that sabbatismos is only used once in the New Testament, and then Hebrews chapter 4, verse 9. You also mentioned that the same word is used in Revelation 14, 13, but you can get your colleague who knows Greek, then ask your colleague to look at the word euphoret. You did say Revelation 14, 13. Look at the word euphoret. It is not katapausis. It is not sabbatismos. It is actually anapausis. Now, of course, you also mentioned, and again, we're going to get to secular history, you also mentioned that Pentecost is of no value today in booths, etc., etc., etc. Now, I don't know about you, but I do believe that the Jewish people deserve to keep their history. And Jews celebrate Passover as a symbol of God delivering them from bondage in Egypt. How would you feel if a Jew said that we should not keep Christmas? How would you feel if a Jew said that we should not celebrate Easter? How would you feel if a Jew said that we should not celebrate Memorial Day or Independence Day? Passover booths, they're part of the Jewish calendar. And as long as there are Jews who have a history, they are going to keep their holy days. So please not let's get anti-Semitic and say that people who have a valuable history are not allowed to celebrate that history. Again, you gloss over something, and believe me, and I do hope that everyone is listening, everyone does determine their heart to go home and search these things in their context. You know, you can shout as loud as you want and say that fulfilling Matthew 5, 17 and 18 means the same thing. But if you know anything about Greek, the word in Matthew 18 is genetai, which comes from the Greek word genomai, which means I become or I am, has nothing to do with fulfill. So please, your friends who assisted you on that, please tell him to go and look again. Now, of course, I briefly think you made a mistake here, and if it wasn't a mistake, please, you know, I guess you can say when you have your time, because you do indeed have the last word today. But Hebrews 7:4, you mentioned, you may have meant, Hebrews 7:4 says, thou shalt forbid. On the basis of that, you were saying that Hebrews 7:4 says the commandments have been done away before thou shalt not forbid the Father commandments or something. But I don't really see that logic, because the only time when we see that command being referred to in Scripture is actually there in Romans chapter 7, 14, outside of the Old Testament. Now, of course, one of your stronghold texts is 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16. And you want us all to believe that the scripture is very valuable. Therefore, you believe the scripture only in the New Testament. Well, please answer something. When Paul wrote in 2 Timothy chapter 3:16 that all scripture is given by inspiration of God, was there a New Testament? Think about that. Anyway, let's get this in here. Let's get this in. Only the PowerPoint, please. Only the PowerPoint. Now, as we look over here, the question was raised that some people are coming and attempt to change times and law. Now, how does this actually happen? When we look through history, we do find that there are a number of people who have attempted to change the law of God. Brother Donahue rightly lifted up that Barnabas was probably the first to speak of an eighth day, that eighth day, notice not the seventh day, the eighth day has been the day of worship, etc. But if you look through scripture, we find that Justin Martyr made an attempt, and finally, the Emperor Constantine, he basically passed a law that said, let all townspeople rest on the central day of the sun. Judged by Constantine, he was a Roman emperor that was basically one who worshipped several gods, and he prayed and said, listen, whatever God helps me win this battle, I'm going to worship him. And it happened to be the day when he prayed for the Christian God, and on that day he decided that he was going to change the whole empire into Christians. The problem was he was also a faithful adherent to the cult of Mithra, and Mithra is worshipped on the Sunday, and he basically said, hey, I have the prerogative to have Christians worship on this day. But even after that, as recent as 1974, because we do know that Constantine, being the head of the Catholic Church, was succeeded by a number of popes who endorsed his work on the first day of the week. And of course, we see that this is something that the Catholic Church does not deny, has not denied. In fact, as recently as 1974, we're going to read a quote that's been made by a leading Catholic scholar. Reading Catholic scholar here, and of course this is not an isolated instance over here. For those who are interested, many Catholic scholars, in fact scholars from many other denominations, have affirmed the sanctity of the seventh day of the week. Look at this there. It says, since Saturday, not Sunday, is specified in the Bible, isn't it curious that non-Catholic people best to take their religion directly from the Bible and not from the church, observe Sunday instead of Saturday? Yes, of course, it is inconsistent. Sunday observance, he says, rest upon the authority of the Catholic Church and not upon an explicit text in the Bible. That observance remains as a reminder of the Mother Church from which non-Catholic sects broke away, like a boy running away from home but still carrying in his pocket a picture of his mother and a lock of her hair. And if you know what the word Protestant means, a Protestant is one who protests against the authority claimed by the Catholic Church. And one of the biggest things they claim is that they have the right to change the day of worship. But of course we know that God in no way tells us that. But if you look at the Converse Catechism of Catholic doctrine, we ask you the question again, which is the Sabbath day? And the answer is in the Catechism, all the young Catholic children going for their confirmation will say Saturday is the Sabbath day. Then they'll be asked, why do you observe Sunday instead of Saturday? So we observe Sunday instead of Saturday because the Catholic Church transferred the solemnity from Saturday to Sunday. So you see, you ask the question, why Sunday? There's no biblical text. It's not produced a biblical text. The only reason of why people worship on Sunday is because there's a tradition of humans that is jealously being held onto. And people will go as far when they want to reject the teaching of the Catholic Church to basically say that God changed and did away with his law just so he could accommodate Pope John Paul II. And so let's get back to the real question. The reason why we are all here. We're not here to do any exegetical gymnastics with text. We're not here to hear the same story rehashed. Colossians chapter 2 verse 16 and the sort of gymnastic jump back to Colossians chapter 2 verse 14, which as we saw yesterday has nothing to do with any law, and of course maybe it's for the wood over the eyes of those who are here for the first time, but those who were here last night know for sure it's got nothing to do with the law. You want to play some gymnastics with 2 Corinthians chapter 3, you want to play some gymnastics with Romans chapter 7, which by the way does not say we were married to the law, we're married to sin. I told you yesterday, that the problem is not with the law, the problem is with you, the problem is with me. I'm the sinner, the law is not the sinner. Why is God going to punish the law for the something that I did? I'm the one who needs to be punished. So what is the real question today? The real question today is, where is the text? Remember the little ad long time ago, where's the beast? We want to see the text. We want to see the text. We want to see that one text. No explicit text, no implicit text that jumps around the question, that thrusts the issue. No 150 texts that you pile together in 5 minutes that people don't have the time to process. But we're asking for one text. Where is the text? Where is the text? Where is the text? Where is the text? Thank you.